Welcome to Educated Conjecture, an Ipsos podcast which combines what the public thinks with what the experts think. Each week, Ipsos's Mike College and Sean Simpson are joined by an informed guest to discuss the issues of the day. What has been on the minds of Canadians over the last year, and what concerns us as we head into 2023? Mike and Sean, along with Gregory Jack, Vice President of Ipsos Public Affairs, have compiled a set of stats from the data Ipsos has gathered over the last year and present to us the 12 stats of Christmas. And now, on to the podcast.
Welcome to Educated Conjecture. Sean, my friend and co-host, how are you?
I'm counting down the days, Mike. End of the year's coming. And I'm losing steam. You know, honestly, I'm losing a bit of steam, so I'm going to be happy for a break.
I'm looking outside at like 8 inches of sopping wet snow. I know you got rain in Toronto yesterday, but it is thick, heavy snow. And Ottawa is definitely going to be a white Christmas. And when this is done, I'm going to go do some shopping. So,
Carefully, you're back.
Yes, I know. It was a crack at me being old. We had a guest lined up. We'll have that guest in the new year to talk about our global trend study, which is a survey of, as I said, global trends across 50 countries. But Billie Ng's going to join us, but she's going to join us in the new year instead of today. So we've switched things around, and we've decided, as we do often, with a lot of planning and forethought, as in yesterday afternoon, to do the 12 stats of Christmas. And we have a guest. Sean, do you want to introduce our guest?
I do. You know, we had to think, who would be willing to come on in such short notice? And I'm happy to announce our own colleague, Gregory Jack. Greg Jack is a VP with Ipsos Public Affairs. He's been with Ipsos for coming on to 4 years now. Isn't that right, Greg? And previous to Ipsos, he's had lots of great experience, both in the public and private sectors. He's got a master's in public administration, and correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, but you're doing yet another master's degree right now. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm doing a master's in science in climate or energy policy. So we're going to talk a bit about that today. I like being in school, I guess. Because I love numbers.
Terrific. And Greg has been managing many of our Alberta clients over the last couple of years, so I like to call him Mr. Alberta. So, Mr. Alberta, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys.
Welcome, Greg. Hey, I'm gonna pull in one more guest. Is that okay, Sean?
Okay,
sure. A surprise guest who is here day in and day out. Well, not day in and day out, but recording in and recording out. Alan Gates, who's our producer. Alan, how are you? Can you come to the, as we would say, the front and have a conversation with us instead of hiding in the background for a second?
Happy to do so. And yeah, I've sat in the background and listened to you make our audience and make me smarter over the last year. So I'm glad to be on this one.
Well, excellent. What I would like to know, Alan, if you've listened to our podcast, we often try to put people on the spot a little bit anyway. Alan, I want to give you the reins today, and that's not a pun on Christmas and the reindeer. Just literally, well, it is a little bit. Give you the reins and let you run, since we're going to run 12 stats. Let's do my math real quick. There's three of us. That's 4 stats. You know the way that I won't pick on Sean, but I can talk. I could do one stat and that'd be an hour. So to keep us in line, can you do that for us?
I can. So I guess the rules are 12 stats. We've got 2 minutes per stat. So I will tell you to be quiet. That's very exciting for me.
I think the rules are when Alan says talk, we talk. When Alan says stop, we stop. How's that, guys?
That sounds good to me.
Yeah. Works for me.
All right.
Yeah. So this 12 stats of Christmas, I guess you are my true loves, and you're going to be giving them to me over the course of the next half hour.
Yeah,
so.
And we're going to sing the stats in a round.
Yeah. One, Micah chatting.
So, Micah,
dude, we might have a copyright issue if you keep singing, Sean.
So, Mike, I believe that you're going to be getting us started. So, you're going to be talking about truckers?
If that's the rules we're going to follow, then I'm in. While I know we're not going to go month by month through the year, I wanted to talk about something that started relatively early in the year. If you remember February, Ottawa and several borders were shut down by the quote-unquote truckers protests, although they weren't all truckers, obviously. And at the time, our prime minister said they were a fringe minority group out there talking. And while they are obviously a minority because not all of Canadians showed up, but in our data, at the time and over a couple waves, almost half, 46%, said, well, I may not support their actions and what they're doing on the ground. I have sympathy and understanding for their cause. And I thought that was interesting because it really does reflect sort of what happened throughout the year. If you look at the, you know, everybody was, well, it's all about vaccine mandates. I think our data showed it was a lot more. It was about bubbling anxiety on the economy, worry about institutions, this changeover in energy transition and where it was going. The most interesting thing for me in that data set when we looked at it was that those most supportive or those most understanding and sympathetic towards the protesters were young Canadians. Under 30, the same group who 7 years before in 2015 had been most supportive of a new Liberal government in Canada. So we had transferred amongst the younger generation from sort of hope to concern over those 7 years. So that's my first stat, guys. What do you think?
Well, I think it's interesting because it, for some reason in my mind, it seems like a long time ago, and yet there are rippling effects. You know, it was a fairly important sort of event in the journey of Canada, really, in at least modern political history. And I think we're going to feel the effects of it for quite some time.
Yeah, and you know, I think, Sean, it does feel like a long time ago. We're already coming up on February again, and I've heard that they're planning a reunion protest. We'll see how that goes. But I do think that, you know, this was reflective of Canadians' views overall on a lot of things. It wasn't really just about truckers or COVID mandates. It really reflected a broad frustration I think Canadians are feeling as they entered 2022 and turned out to be a bit of a difficult year in the end anyway. So.
All right. Well, you guys managed to keep that at 2 minutes, 10 seconds. So very good so far.
We'll do better. We'll do better.
All right. Over to you, Sean.
Okay, I'm going to, for the second stat here, I'm going to stick with politics, and the number I'm going to use is 1 in 3. 1 in 3 Canadians. This is the proportion who believe that the Trudeau government has done a good job and deserves re-election. I mean, this is interesting because that figure hasn't changed in really a number of years. The 2019 federal election, minority, about 1 in 3 support of the government. 2021, again, 1 in 3 support of the government. This number is static. And I wonder, in the face of that, whether the prime minister will seize the weather and go for his own walk in the snow at some point this year. Because how many prime ministers, Greg, can you name who have won 4 successive mandates, particularly if 2 or maybe even 3 of them, if this next one be a minority, were in fact a minority government?
I can't name a lot, Sean, but I also can't name a lot of prime ministers who have faced this many different opposition leaders. So Trudeau certainly, he's had a long run, and it's a government that certainly Canadians are getting a little bit tired of. But at the same time, there's politics are nothing if unpredictable.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head in terms of the number of opposition leaders he's faced and properly the quality, right? If you're running about a third who think you should be reelected, it says as much about you and you continue to win as it does about the competitors you're facing. So, you know, we'll see what traction we get in 2023 on the other side of the ledger.
So one of the biggest issues that we've been talking about in the last year is climate change. And I think, Greg, you've got a stat on that.
I do. And, you know, we were talking about Trudeau and this government has made climate change action a big pillar of their entire time in government. If you remember when Trudeau was elected in 2015, one of the first things they did was went to the COP meeting at the time and had a big delegation. Canada's back. Well, we just had a recent COP meeting and we did some polling in advance of that. We did a global polling because we looked at attitudes around the world. And Canada actually ranks in the bottom third or quarter of 34 countries in terms of support for climate action. So when you hear the government and Trudeau talking about Canadians' desire to take action on climate change, we're not seeing that reflected in the views of Canadians when they're asked about specific policies. And I'll talk a bit later about some of those policies, but there's a little bit of a lack of the rhetoric matching the action and what the perceived views of Canadians are on climate change versus what you might hear from the government.
And Greg, do you think this is a new trend, or because I think Canadians always like to think that they were leading when it came to attitudes and behaviors towards climate change. Is this a relatively new evolution then that we're starting to fall down sort of the list of global importance?
Well, I think, and it really ties into Mike's point as well. Leading up to the 2019 election, climate change was a big concern for Canadians. There's always been a lag, though, between the views of Canadians in terms of what's important and what they're willing to do. But we had COVID, and all of a sudden, the things that were really, really important, like climate change, were displaced by the urgent. So I don't think it's a new trend, but I think it's an accelerating one for sure.
We've spent two decades plus telling people it's a problem, but not having a hard conversation about how we really address it, right? And I think that that's the, we don't have two decades to have that conversation, but I think we're starting to see that fatigue come up of, sure, it's a problem, but no one's given me tools yet, so we'll see.
So another issue that has rocketed up in terms of a priority is health. Mike, you have a stat.
So I do, and this one's, you know, Greg has, you know, climate change has always been a pillar of the government. Here's a non-pillar of the government in healthcare, and to at least the federal government. 50% of Canadians say they're satisfied with their provincial health system. That's down 16 points from the year before. In another study we did, a global study we looked at sort of nationally around the world, Canadians are now lower than the U.S. in terms of our satisfaction with the healthcare system. So obviously tons of, you know, depending where you are in the country, ER rooms not open, shortages of healthcare human resources, doctors, nurses, technicians, et cetera. More of late, the last couple of months, federal, provincial wrangling over money and discussion. So lots of negative news, but it really has been an issue for the longest time. It's become a systemic problem for governments, and Canadians are getting quite worried. And I think it's probably going to be an issue for both the federal and provincial governments for many years to come.
Trudeau said he's not going to let the status quo continue. So what do you think he's going to do? Is the next election going to be fought on health care? That hasn't happened in a while.
It hasn't happened in a while. I don't know that it's ever happened, that we've actually had one where the health care has been front and center. It is a dangerous, you know, conversation to have, right? Because people immediately revert to, you know, where everybody avoids the third rail. And then, you know, it's a little bit like Kim Campbell said, you know, we can't have a serious policy conversation in the middle of an election. Different issue, but, you know, the same sort of time. That's not the time to actually have a, how do we rebuild this? Because it will get torqued politically into all different directions and it won't move forward.
Yeah, you know, Mike, you and I have been doing this a long time, and Sean as well. And we know healthcare has always been at the top of the agenda. All of a sudden now it's back there, but we have all these news reports anecdotally of sick people, sick kids, hospitals being overrun. There's a lot of federal provincial fighting going on this issue, as there always has been. But I really do think this issue has now become a little bit more front and center and urgent for Canadians. They feel it. It's not notional anymore. It's real. Yeah. And one of those really endearing myths that Canadians have is that we have this great healthcare system, and it's public, and it's a world leader. And now the rubber's hitting the road on that a little bit, and people are starting to think about what that really means. And that means shutting down children's hospitals. And that's not something I think people are going to accept for a long time.
So yet another issue to add to the pile, inflation. We can't ignore it. Sean, you've got a stat?
I do. My stat is 30%. 30% of Canadians list interest rates and inflation as their top issue, behind only the one we were just discussing, healthcare. It's been over 30 years since concern about inflation and interest rates has been this high on the agenda. And moreover, if we compare Canadians' concerns about inflation to the concerns around the world, Canada is ranked among the top five. You know, we're up there with the UK, where inflation is even higher. We're even up there with Argentina, where they're having, you know, hyperinflation and currency devaluation. So, you know, we simply cannot underestimate the anxieties that Canadians have about inflation. And, you know, I think to at least some extent, the government may actually be underestimating these concerns, because if you look back at Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland's economic update this fall, there was very little relief in there for Canadian households, and they noticed that gap.
Yeah, and you know, Sean, I think that this actually relates a little bit to the discussion we were having on healthcare and climate change. Everything's getting more expensive. Governments spent a lot of money during COVID, and now there's a lot of demand for relief on a whole range of things. From food prices to finding ways to fix the healthcare system to solve the climate crisis. So there's a whole bunch of things happening at the same time as we're facing a generational increase in prices and housing prices and inflation that we haven't seen and most of us don't remember since the 1970s. So a lot of things coming together into one nasty storm.
Yeah, I think that the jury's out. But I will say this, you guys don't know this, but our data on December consumer confidence is coming out and it jumped 5 points. So maybe Canadians know something we don't know. We'll see.
Ooh. Yeah. I hope so.
They usually do.
That's why we pull them.
So with inflation hitting us all in the wallet, Greg, can you tell us about Canadians' willingness to pay for climate change initiatives?
Yeah, and I think that this is another stat that relates back to the point we were making earlier about the talk and the walk on climate change. Half of Canadians, one half, are willing to pay absolutely zero more dollars per year to fight climate change. And then within the other half, you know, you're looking at $100, maybe $200. Very few people are willing to actually put a lot more money out there personally to fight climate change. So they're looking to governments, they're looking to businesses to solve these problems, but they themselves don't really see themselves as part of that solution, part of the people who have to make the sacrifices. And they want this solved, but they want somebody else to solve it.
It's disappointing, but I don't know that it's surprising, given we've told them for a long time, you don't have to change your lifestyle, right? We're going to have a little carbon tax over here, and it's going to be net neutral revenue-wise. You're going to pay as much as
you're
going to
make
back,
money.
And you're going to make money on it, whether it's true or not. There's all kinds of different numbers that say, some say it is, some say it isn't. But so to turn or, you know, to expect people to suddenly go, wow, and that's my point earlier on. We haven't had a real discussion about the changes we need to make at the individual level.
Well, I think Canadians think they're already doing their part.
Think they're recycling.
Since the 80s, we told them to reduce, reuse, recycle, and most Canadians have a good handle on that now. But what's the next call to action? We haven't had a pithy slogan or something that's very easy to activate in 40 years. So once we get that organized, maybe Canadians will be prepared to do a little bit more.
So with everything happening over the last couple of years, some of us are probably yearning for the good old days. And Mike, you want to talk about nostalgia?
Absolutely. Yes. I just threw this a curve into the chat because we were getting a little depressing. So this might be depressing. It might be good. So I'll leave it to you guys to decide. But this is out of our global trend study that will be released in the new year. 56% of Canadians say they would like Canada to be more like the way it used to be. So, you know, and globally, it's 58%. So we're not far off of the global. We'll look in the new year, whether we line up with the UK, the US, rest of Europe, LATAM, where we sit on that. But I are we seeing this growing sense? Well, I'll ask you guys, is that a good thing or bad thing? This desire to return to our roots and where we were, and or does it hurt progress going forward if that's how we feel?
It's hard to know, you know, what aspects people want to return to. You know, is it lower prices? Is it a more homogenous society? Is it, you know, lower education levels? Like, it's hard to know what they want to return to. So nostalgia is sort of superficial, but okay, if we're going to go down this road, what is it that you actually want to return to? And it might be that when people think about the various dimensions, you kind of realize, oh, maybe it wasn't, you know, better that way.
Well, I agree with Sean, and I think that when we look back on the past, we sometimes have a really good ability to gloss over the bad parts and remember the good parts. And there is a lot of good things going on in the world today. Like, you know, despite all the doom and gloom we talked about, life expectancy is up, less people are in poverty. There's been great, great progress on diversity, equality, and inclusion, indigenous rights, and that sort of thing. So I really think that there's maybe a nostalgic view of the way things used to be in terms of remembering the good parts, but one of the great human abilities is to forget the bad parts. And we've had a bad couple of years, right? We've had COVID, and now we have inflation and all that. So I could see why Canadians are kind of hearkening back to the old times. But despite all this, the current times really aren't as bad as we might think they are. And they're probably not as good as we're going to think they are in a couple of years as well.
So I think we're on the eighth stat. And Sean, you want to talk about social cohesion?
I do. And I think it's been as a result of all of these challenges that we're facing. We've seen over the last 2 years that social cohesion, based on our index, has dropped by about 20 points. It doesn't really matter what those 20 points necessarily reflect, just to know that social cohesion is plummeting. What does that mean? Well, it means that, you know, I like my neighbors less, that I feel like in Kitchener, Ontario, I have less in common with Greg in other parts of the country or with those people who live in British Columbia, for example. We're just sort of falling apart at the seams, and we're now prioritizing me over we. And that saddens me a little bit, because one of the things that I like to think of, you know, as a political science student, and Greg, you studied politics as well, is that one of the things that fundamentally differentiates us from the United States is peace, order, and good government, meaning that we're prioritizing the we over me, whereas the Americans were life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which, by the way, happiness is a proxy for property, which prioritizes me over we. So I feel like we're losing a little bit of our Canadian identity here with social cohesion declining.
Yeah, Sean, I think that's a great point. And the last couple of years have really been challenging for people. Governments and institutions have asked us all to make increasing sacrifices, whether it's pulling kids out of school or moving to online learning, get your vaccine, wear a mask. And I think some of that is being driven by, or some of this lack of social cohesion and the me over we is being driven by the fact that we've been asked to do a lot over the last few years. One of the interesting aspects of that stat that I did know, because I've seen the same one, is I think that the only generation who is prioritizing we over me still are the baby boomers. And they're the ones who everyone says are the selfish generation, but they're actually coming out on top on this one.
Well, they're the only ones with the financial help to be helping others, I suppose. Maybe that explains it.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually think it's the most challenging issue we have to face as a country. Set aside inflation, set aside healthcare, all those other things. If we don't have social cohesion, it is very hard. Can you imagine ever trying to get some of the plurality programs we have, like CPP and unemployment insurance and healthcare and some of the things that don't net benefit a majority of the population on a day in and day out basis, that we would have ever been able to get those in today's world, where it's just much more me versus we. I mean, we're used to it. If we don't have social cohesion, there's a reason we don't have vote. There's a reason we see declines in charitable donations and volunteering, and that is the decline in social cohesion. So
the war in Ukraine dominated the headlines a lot, especially in the first part of 2022, but there is conflict happening all over the world that gets less headlines. And Greg, you have a rather ominous stat regarding people's expectations for global conflict.
I do. The time for nostalgia and feeling better about things is over. We're back to the depressing part. You know, we did a global poll, including Canadians, of the likelihood of seeing a conflict similar to World War I or World War II in the next 25 years. 25 years is not a huge time frame. Anyway, 3/4 of Canadians, and that's similar to the global average, which I think is about the same. 3/4 of Canadians think that we're going to see a conflict like that in the next 25 years. And that is a scary stat, right? You hear about the doomsday clock and the 1 or 2 minutes to midnight. I think people feel right now that we are getting closer, not further away from that.
Yeah, thanks for bringing us back to the joyous season, Greg.
Hard to know what to say in response to that.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Even in the World Wars, they paused at the front. I will say this, when we were at the bottom of the pandemic, and this ties into some of the nostalgia stuff we talked about earlier and lack of progress, we did a futures piece, and I talked to a former federal ADM, asked him where he thought the world was going, and he said, "I firmly believe in the arch of human progress, right? That we, decade over decade, century over century, things have gotten better, and we've had less war, less challenges." And I think that he said, you know, I can't imagine that's all going to unravel in a couple of decades, right? So maybe we're in a blip and we're staring at it now, but 10 years from now we'll realize that we weren't as close to it as we thought.
You know, it's darkest before the dawn. And, you know, when you look at where we are today in the world, there's a lot of good things happening. It's just hard to see it when it's right up close.
In the face of that stat, I'm just going to choose to remain optimistic. My own little defiance here.
Yeah.
So we've been battling inflation over the course of the last probably couple of years, but one of the big concerns is that battle is going to lead us into recession. Sean, you have a stat.
86% of Canadians believe Canada will face a recession in the next year. And what's remarkable about this stat is that it diverges from the roughly 50-50 chances that some economists have been giving a recession. And I think this really underscores the growing divergence between the macroeconomic indicators that economists study and sort of the microeconomic realities that Canadians say they're facing in the household. They're concerned about, a majority are concerned about putting food on the table, and it goes up among parents. I mean, this is quite a fundamental thing, and the fact that so many households and parents are worried about the basic necessities of life suggests to me that the sort of the experience of Canadians is very different from what economists are saying is actually happening in Canada.
That's a, you know, Sean, you should write an op-ed on that.
I should.
You did. That's an excellent point. I think the gap's there. We see it in all of our data. The difference between, you know, there's a gap on climate change. Leaders say one thing, Canadians feel another. There's a gap on where the economy's going. And then even within Canadians, we know there's a gap. There's a big difference across the generations. I've been doing this for more than a few years, and I don't know that I've ever seen the gap in generational differences in their views and outlooks on what's important and how they feel about the future. It's very worrisome, the gap between you know, boomers and Gen Z. So
yeah, we were talking about that earlier, and I agree with you, Mike. I think this is the fundamental challenge facing us right now, is getting everyone kind of rowing in the same direction and acting, you know, like a Canadian cohesive again. We talked earlier in the podcast about the Prime Minister and some of the provinces, and you do see some emergence of a lot of the me versus we from the provinces as well, with the Alberta Sovereignty Act and Saskatchewan passing mm-hmm. something similar, and Quebec's and Ontario using the notwithstanding clause. So how are we going to, as a country, resolve those issues and actually act like one country again? That maybe that's what I'm nostalgic for. And that's a huge challenge as we go into 2023, which could be an election year for us in Ottawa.
Yeah, you know, the first time I sort of clued in on the social cohesion stuff was many years ago. I was doing focus groups in, I won't say what city, but in one Ontario city. And in an Ontario city, within an hour's drive, one of the auto plants was shutting down. And the people in the one I was in said, well, those people over there, they made their bed with the automakers and they're now on their own. I'm just glad it's not here. An hour away in Ontario, they were like, them, us. That's their problem, not our problem. And I was like, wow, so much for rowing in this together, right? So
this is sort of how Sean feels about the snow right now here in Ottawa.
Exactly. It's our own
your
fault
problem, not mine. I got the freezing yeah. rain yesterday.
Exactly, yeah.
So I don't know how old all of us are, but I'm willing to guess that for all of our lives until, you know, the start of the fall, we had one head of state who was Queen Elizabeth, and we have had a shift, of course, over to our new king. Greg, you have some stats.
Yeah, obviously, another big thing that happened in 2022 was the death of Her Majesty the Queen. King Charles is now our head of state, and 6 in 10 Canadians are skeptical about King Charles' ability to succeed as head of state. So obviously, coming off of the long, long reign of Queen Elizabeth, there's going to be very big shoes to fill. But we've been talking about the monarchy for a while, and I know, Sean, you have a huge interest in this, so I'd love to hear your insights on what you think is going to happen, given this healthy skepticism, but also continued support in general for an institution that I think Canadians love for a long time.
Well, we know a slim majority of Canadians are of the opinion that now that Her Majesty has died, we should sever ties to the monarchy. But that sort of aggregate national stat disguises the fact that it's very heavily skewed towards Quebec. And if you remove Quebec from the equation, it's only about 40% of Canadians who believe we should sever ties to the monarchy. And the truth is, you know, constitutional change at that level requires, a near consensus. 7 out of 10 provinces, a majority in each of the Senate and everything. And I think we're nowhere close to the consensus that's required for constitutional change And so we're, you know, for better or for worse, stuck with Charles, depending on how people feel personally about him. They do really like the next generation. That's William and Kate. So yeah. my personal guess is that the monarchy's here for quite some time.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe prediction. I think that if this was a prediction show, which we will never do, I guess we're not.
You can only ever be wrong.
But if we were making predictions, I would say absolutely nothing changes on the monarchy, because those who want it to change really don't care if it changes. And there's a group out there who don't want it to change who will draw a line in the sand. And you're to all the points you made, Sean. I mean, and what does it do for us? Does it solve inflation? Does it solve healthcare? Does it solve climate change? Does it solve any of the pressing issues in front of us? It is just another focus that the governments would go through and turn around the other side and say, we've accomplished something, but it doesn't matter. So it's not going to happen.
So, Mike, I'm going to let you wrap things up with our 12th stat. You have given us the word global. I don't know what that means, so please enlighten us.
Well, no, I'm actually going to talk about diversity. I was going to do global, but that's depressing too. So I of all the stats that we track and we look through, there is one that I think is it speaks to Canada today. It speaks to Canada in the past. It speaks to Canada in the future. And that is that that's a very simple question. Is having a diverse population is a very good thing for Canada. Do you agree? In December 2020, the tail end of the pandemic, all the struggles, et cetera, was 80%. Today, it's 81%. So it has held rock solid throughout all of the challenges we face, all of the concerns around healthcare and growing backlogs, all of the concerns about inflation and recession, which are moving into, we know, to worries about jobs. And that doesn't mean people are always going to go, immigration is a great thing, or the way immigration is working is going well. But the fact that we're pretty steadfast on the notion of diversity, on the notion of that sort of traditional mosaic in Canada, with facing 500,000 immigrants coming in a year to drive our economy, I think is a really good sign for Canada. I think it's one of the things that we should anchor, and we should see some hope in the future, given that the vast majority of Canadians think that this is the right direction to be going.
One of the stats that I share at as a party trick, I'm pretty lame. Yeah,
we're so boring.
When I'm traveling and meet new people, is that a majority of the people who live in the city of Toronto were not born in this country. Yeah. And people think that's a really cool stat. I think it's a cool stat. It's higher than any other city in the world. And again, if we're going to lose social cohesion as a defining Canadian characteristic, at least we have diversity as a defining Canadian characteristic, and that makes me really proud.
One of the things that is not broken over all of this is Canada is one of the most successful countries in the world at integrating newcomers, and we remain steadfastly supportive of the idea of us being a society where we welcome this diversity. And that has not broken throughout all of the social cohesion and COVID tests and all the other things that we've had. So that, I think, is a great reason for optimism. We're welcoming Ukrainians. We welcomed Afghanis. Whether or not the government is actually putting in place the protocols and systems needed to do that. But Canadians are very supportive of diversity.
And I think our politicians recognize that, because if you look across the spectrum of the political parties, they're all in favor of more immigration. They may change the mix and the makeup and stuff like that and have views on how we do it and integrate, but no one's going, we need to slide these back, with the exception of one province. And there it's less about immigration and more about language.
Thank you, Mike, for that last stat, and thank you for making it optimistic and hopeful as we end off the 12 stats of Christmas. And a big thanks to Gregory Jack of Ipsos Public Affairs for joining us for this conversation.
Thank you all. I think we are drawing near to our... Alan, do we stick to our two-minute timing?
You did. You actually all behaved yourselves. It was great.
We're all used to doing clips, right? You got to clip yourself for the media. If you're talking to Global, you know, there's a little alarm in my head that says you need to shut up in about 5 seconds.
Yeah, the worst thing you can ever do is give a 30-second answer in 2 minutes, because then you're in trouble. So anyway, thank you guys. This has been a lot of fun. I would love if the 11 of the 12 stats weren't negative, but I think that they're not all negative, right? I think what we do is highlight where Canadians are so these things can be addressed. If we weren't doing these things, we weren't talking about sort of the concerns and the worries, maybe we wouldn't see leaders focusing on healthcare, climate change, some of those challenges. So, you know, as our global CEO for public affairs, Daryl, often says, it's a great opportunity to speak truth to power in some of these things and be that connection between Canadians and their leaders, be they private sector, public sector, and whatnot. So thank you for sharing, guys.
Thanks, you, Ben. And thank you for Alan for keeping us on track.
Yeah, good night. Good job, Alan. Thank you.
Have a safe and happy holidays, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Educated Conjecture. Follow us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts for another episode of Public Opinion and Informed Insights. If you have a topic you'd like to see covered on an upcoming episode, please send us an email at publicaffairs@ipsos.com. That's publicaffairs@ipsos.com.